Hey, everybody. It's Julie,
Heather,
and Cindy.
And you are listening to The Conversation. This is a rebroadcast of a conversation so nice, we had to play it twice. Thanks for listening.
Have fun.
Happy Friday, everybody. Yay. Welcome to The Conversation. We're so glad you are a part of the conversation today, and it is going to be one that I don't know we've ever been more excited than the conversation we're going to have today, ladies and gentlemen, because we're talking with Max Lucado, New York Times bestselling author, awesome. Author of my very favorite children's book, You Are Special, and so many others. I think a lot of people, especially in the Christian realm, know Max Lucado very well, and they also generally have a favorite book. He's written so many. Mm-hmm. Incredibly talented guy, and he's going to be with us for at least a half an hour today talking on the subject of his new book, Grace.
It's my new favorite. It is the best.
He is my favorite. I haven't had a chance to really spend much time with his book, but Cindy, you said you were up last night.
Well, I was
reading,
just going to,
couldn't put it down.
Yeah, a couple chapters, and all of a sudden, you know, it's 2 a.m, and I'm like, well spent time. I loved it.
Do you know what book I did that? It was Susie Larson's Growing Grateful Kids.
Another
just sitting there crying. So anyway, I'm so excited to have a copy of this book in my hot little hands. And I'm really, really feel excited to talk to one of my very favorite authors, Max Lucado, coming up here in just a minute and sharing some of our own examples of grace, which I have one to share. Which was really, truly incredible for me. Of course, we just had the elections on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And being a broadcaster, I was nervous because these things require so much live shots and technical things to go right and timing to be correct. And all of it's off the cuff. And it's a very polarized society we're living in now. So it's a lot of pressure when you're broadcasting because you want to word things in a way that no one reads into them, thinking you're trying to push one side or the other. And I have a new co-anchor who's incredibly talented, but we've just never done this before.
Sure.
And so there's no familiarity there with if I am out of questions or things to say, is he going to pick it up? So I had a lot of anxiety, and I called my mom before going to the station and just said, will you pray for me that I just, above all else, remain peaceful and that we just really do a service for the viewers listening to us. And my dear friend Belinda knew I was nervous, so she prayed for me that morning. And I prayed the whole way into the station.
Mm.
My main thing was, give me a sense of calm, because I'm telling you, it's so chaotic during most election coverage nights that is what kind of gets in the way, too, is adrenaline and chaos. And it's hard to kind of see through it all and just remain calm on air. And I'm telling you, it was the smoothest. Easiest broadcast. And I'm not commenting at all on what happened, what the outcome of the election was in any way, shape, or form. I'm just saying, from my perspective, I really enjoyed the people we had on the panel. I remained calm. I found the whole thing fascinating and actually really enjoyed it. I love elections. I love politics, but sometimes it's hard to enjoy when you feel like, where are we going next? We just lost that live shot. Why can't they call up these results? It's just hard to enjoy. So,
had you ever, Julie, been covered in prayer like that before on an election time?
No.
Have you ever done that?
No.
Initiating?
And it's sad to say because I mean, every election I go in with some trepidation.
Sure.
But this one in particular, I was just very there. And we had a big panel. We've never done that before. We usually have one or two political analysts. And so I don't mean to go on and on. I'm just saying there were several points in the night where at first I went, wow, it's like so calm. I'm enjoying this so much. And then you go, oh, that's right. I prayed about this.
Well, but let me just say, good for you. That was what you decided to anchor into.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's probably a change, Julie, right? Would you say that's a change?
It's a change
in the last
in
couple
that
years of your life?
Yes, it's a change in that situation. I've certainly done that with my children and my marriage and those kind of moments, but really not so much in my professional life. Yeah,
very
so
cool.
There's my example of grace.
So, Julie, you didn't have any moments like this.
I'm a shot. 30 seconds.
Oh, no.
I'm on right now.
Is this Ron?
I don't believe you.
What's that?
Ron Burgundy. That is Will Ferrell in Anchorman. Who Jared Sebesta, who's also on this station, can quote the entire movie from his memory. I'm on right now. Really? I don't believe you.
That would be
me. I've had those moments. Ted. Thanks very much for
reminding me. That's a lot of pressure. You did it.
And
you
I'm
did
just
it
so
together,
happy.
Right?
And I'm also happy that there are no more attack ads on television because, me too, my goodness.
It is a relief. It is a break.
Yes, I have never been so happy to see a commercial for hemorrhoid cream in my whole life. It's like, I don't care. List the side effects. I don't care. I'll hear all of them.
Well, and I posted a scripture on my Facebook yesterday that just basically reminds us that as Christians, we are to pray for and honor our kings and our leaders in our land. No matter what.
Yes. And, thank you.
You know, so no matter what the outcome was, if it went your way or if it didn't go your way, on all levels, our responsibility still is to pray for those leaders because none of them have gone into position without passing before the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord was not surprised of the results.
And the other thing is to not despair. I think so many times, you know, it's easy when you have very, very strongly held beliefs about what's right for the country and what's wrong to start to despair when it doesn't go the way you think it should go. That's and just to say, you know, it might not be what you thought. It might not be what you think is best. And it might be a rough road ahead.
Sure.
Or it might be the opposite. Mm-hmm. But either way, you know, Barack Obama is president and deserves our respect because he is our president.
Yes, and our prayers.
And he deserves our prayers. And he's not in control in the ultimate
game.
The God's, ultimate driver's
seat. God's purpose and God's kingdom is still being advanced.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know the purposefulness of any kind of road we're on.
Can't see the whole
and
plan.
And life is full of turns and twists.
I'm hopeful.
So I'm hanging on to that grace.
Yeah.
And speaking of grace, I have three. Top three.
Oh. Cindy's top three are full of grace today?
Interesting. Number one is chocolate. Okay, so when I was reading this great book, Grace, I was like having a little chocolate. And I realized I was eating the best yummiest chocolate. I kind of now go for the really expensive bar of chocolate. And I thought, wow, this, you know, it was like an analogy to some of the things I was thinking about in my life because your relationship and with grace or with God continues to get better and better. I mean, I start out life and I'm okay with like those no name little circular chocolate things that are like wax, right?
Right.
And I'm like, ooh, candy chocolate, yum, yum. And then I, you know, you move on and you maybe go to like a, you know, a candy bar. And then pretty soon you're like, ooh, you know, once you start moving ahead in the chocolates, you don't want to go backwards.
No, you don't.
And that's the way it is with the way I'm feeling about grace and with my relationship with God. The more I kind of dive in and trust and keep trying to work with it and keep trying to, you know, let go and move ahead with it, the better it gets. And I really don't want to go backwards.
Mm.
So then.
Chocolate.
And so then, grace again. Okay. So then I go on to the video. Onto the internet, and I see a video, and we'll post this one. But this is a little girl that's in front of a window, like at a zoo, and a lion is coming behind her, and she's smiling at the camera with her back to the lion. Okay, so she
plexiglass deal. It's like the thick plexiglass behind her.
She's totally safe, but it looks very eerie. So the lion is like licking its chops, heading towards her. And what I was so impressed with was the girl turned around. Now, if that was me, I would have screamed, flipped over, fainted. You know. Ran into the plexiglass, something.
Wet yourself.
Right. She was surprised, but it was so cool. She turned and looked at that lion in the eye. And I thought, oh, my goodness. And then she moved back. But she kind of turned, acknowledged it, assessed it, and then she kind of scampered away. I thought, that's my new way. I'm really going to try to approach problems when I have God's hand and really assured of his strong, intense, rumbling grace. That I'm going to, like, not go, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no.
Right, yeah. Right.
I'm going to go.
Doom.
I'm going under. I'm going to go look it in the eye and just assess and then say, there's a reason, and he's here, and I'll go from there.
In Romans, it tells us, if God is for us, who can be against us?
Right on.
You know, seriously, if you have got the God of the universe not only living inside of you as the Holy Spirit, but moving around you and having his purpose move forward, there is no reason to fear.
Right. And you know what? My thing is like recently, that's hard to do because there's some big things coming up. And you know what? But I'm going to keep trying. Mm. And you know what? Every time I do, it kind of comes out.
Yeah. And I can see it in you, actually.
Oh, thank
we can
you.
See
thank
you.
You.
In my
All
girlfriend.
Right. And so then number
three.
Okay. So I happen to be channel surfing. Judge Judy's on. And I go, wow. Okay.
And you stopped there?
And I stopped. And I go, no, I did. Because I was thinking grace, right? And I thought, you know, one thing that's different is if we come to God, like the people on Judge Judy come to Judge Judy, they're not ready to come clean. They're not ready to apologize. They're not ready to change it. They're waiting for the judge to say, you're wrong and you're right. That's that. But I thought, wow, you know what? What I've been doing is I've been kind of approaching God a little bit that way, like, I don't know. I'm not really coming clean. I'm like, I'm okay, kind of. You judge, you know. But now I'm coming forth and just laying it all out. And I thought, wow, you know what? It's so different. If you come in and you go, you're not judging me. You're working with me. You're mm-hmm. my father. You want the best for me.
Yeah.
Here it all is. I'm not going to hide it. I'm not going to, you know,
sugarcoat it. Yeah. Pretend it's not so.
And then I'm just, you know, I need to change what I want from my relationship with God a little more. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Wow. You got all that from this book?
Yes.
Wait, you got all that from Judge Judy? From chocolate to television. This book apparently is transformative. I love
kidding.
But I love the way you're looking at things.
Yeah, well, I tell you, the book is
grace in mind. Too.
Awfully great.
Yeah,
for that sort of thing, it gets you thinking.
All right, let's talk about it.
I'm excited to hear Max's definition of grace, but the one I use with my junior hires is grace is getting something we don't deserve.
Amen.
Getting something we don't deserve.
And you know what? I think we all need grace. We need it in every season, but coming up, especially in the season that gets to be so crazy, focus gets pulled in 50 different directions. And so I think we could all use a little grace. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk with national best-selling author Max Lucado about his new book, Grace, and all kinds of other things when we come back on The Conversation. Stick around.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Conversation.
There's only grace, there's only love, there's only mercy, and believe me, it's enough. Your sins are gone without a trace, and there's nothing left now. There's only
Welcome back to The Conversation, everybody. We are very, very excited to have prolific author Max Lucado on the line with us today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's a privilege. You are very kind to include me.
Well, we're having a little breakup on your phone. Do you know if you're, are you on a cell phone or a landline?
I'm on a landline. Is that better?
That's better right there. Thank you very much. So where are you calling from?
Well, actually, my family and I are on a little short vacation. I know most people don't vacation this time of year, but we snuck away to Hawaii, so I'm calling you from warm, sunny country.
Oh, what time is it there?
We are about 4 hours ahead of you.
Okay. Oh, fantastic.
It's not terribly early. Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us on your vacation. That's so very kind of you.
Aloha.
Hey, my wife is tired of me anyway.
Yeah. Too much time together is never a good thing. You need little breaks for sure. Now, so you're going to be vacationing there. Anything you're going to do like scuba diving, skydiving,
well,
parasailing?
Trying to get in some golf. I love to play golf. I don't play it very well, but we love it. And really, we're just hanging out a little bit. We've had the gas pedal to the floor since about July.
I bet.
And so we just built this. I was actually speaking in L.A., and I was speaking in Honolulu, and I thought, well, now that works. And so we just,
it sure does.
Hang out for a little bit. As long as we're over here. So we just made a little getaway out of it.
Well, good for you. And I have to say, when is the pedal ever not to the metal with you? You've got a new book out called Grace, More Than We Deserve, Greater Than We Imagine. And you have a list of all the books you've written in the front of this book. Is it 50 now?
Yeah. I some people do quality books. I just go the quantity route.
I mean, it's unbelievable. Where, and you also do radio, and obviously you're a speaker, and you're still a pastor in Texas. How do you do that?
Well, you know, it's what I love to do. It really is. I love it, and I love working with the church. I love talking about Jesus. I really do. It's heartfelt for me. I think these are difficult days we live in, and people mm-hmm. are discouraged, and they need to be encouraged, and I'm very thankful. I don't do a lot of things, so I just try to do kind of that one thing, stay focused on writing and preaching, and I love it. And if I can, you know, just encourage people a little bit, lift their spirits,
that's
a great victory for me.
So we'd like you to stay a poor golfer and a fabulous author, if you don't mind, for our sake.
I think that's been determined providentially.
Well, I think so many people have their very favorite Max Lucado book, and mine that I really just am so blessed I get to thank you for in person is the children's book, You Are Special. And that book just resonates with me. For those who don't know that book, it's about a bunch of Wemmicks who care too much what other people think until they meet the woodcarver. They're all wooden people, and they realize it matters what their maker thinks, the woodcarver, not other people. And I just bought a stack of them, and every time somebody has a baby, I give them the book, You Are Special. And I'm just wondering, how do you bridge that? Where do the ideas come from? You know, some of your books are very mature and for a grown-up audience, like your latest book, Grace. And then the other, you speak so clearly and beautifully to children.
I love kids. I do. And I also love stories. There's a funny history on that particular book. And by the way, that's my favorite, too.
Is it?
Love that little story. It is. And that little story has gone all over the world. I mean, literally, it is translated into many languages. It has gone where I'll never go. One of the places it's most widely distributed, believe it or not, is in China.
Oh,
Mandarin,
I love it.
China, and that is because doesn't have any reference to God or Jesus. Mm-hmm. It's all symbolic, and so they permit it. And it's just really has great access and use over there. But I wrote that book on assignment. I did. I had promised my friends at Crossway Publishing a children's story, and the deadline was a particular day. And so I just said, okay, I've got Thursday afternoon. I've got to come up with a story.
No way. Oh, my goodness.
No way. That's not even fair.
Well, no. You know, I mean, people who study or teach on deadlines, we know what that's like. You know, sometimes you do it out of inspiration, sometimes out of perspiration. And God can use both.
That's right. Absolutely.
So, I got honored, and when I wrote the story, I thought, "Oh, hey, this is a good story." But then it just—I went back, and I think in the rewrites, it took on a little stronger element.
Well, I especially loved it. I gave it to a girlfriend of mine who's having a very, very hard time because her child was born with some cognitive and developmental disabilities, and we just cried over that book. You know that God made you; He carved you just the way you are, and you are special, and God doesn't make mistakes. If you don't have it and you're listening, you really should buy it. And, of course, the new one, too. And, Heather, you were talking about how you love the way – Heather is with us in studio as well, and she's a youth pastor, the phenom, here in town. And you love stories, too, Heather.
Oh, I do. And, Max, I discovered you when I was in college. And so I was, you know, in these classes in my Christian college where I was just learning kind of all this heady stuff. And so to pick up your books and have you explain a really intense theological concept in such a beautiful, story-driven way that I wouldn't forget was just absolutely incredible to me. So you are an amazing storyteller. If I was pressed, my favorite book of yours is God Thinks You're Wonderful.
I like the title. I like where we're going with the title,
Mr.
Uncato.
It's so great. You know, I'm a junior high pastor, so I work with 7th through 9th graders, and they just really struggle in that time of life to feel like they are loved and accepted.
And wonderful.
And wonderful. And so I teach on Psalm 139, 13 through 16 quite a bit. And so I have read your book in front of 12 to 15-year-olds, and they are enamored. I mean, it's like it's reading time in a second grade classroom.
Oh,
they all sit
it.
On the ground around me, and it's just so cool because you give such personal ideas. So, ladies, if you've not read it, it has things like God is fond of you. If he had a wallet, your photo would be in it. If you had a refrigerator, your picture would be on it. And just real tangible ways to show God's love and adoration of us.
So does this just come to you, Mr. Lucado? How do you come up with something like that?
I don't know how to answer that question. You know, all of my books, except for the children's books, originate as sermons. And I've been at the same church since 1988. And so I'm just like any other pastor or middle school leader. Every week I need to generate a message, almost every week. I don't preach every Sunday, but many weeks I do. And so I'm like other folks. I'm thinking, okay, Lord, the deadline's coming. I have a sermon due. What's a creative way I can do this? And it just seems... I'm thankful that I haven't run out of ideas yet.
We are too. We're
no
very
kidding.
Thankful.
Oh, Max, this is Cindy. I'm also in studio. And well, can I call you Max? I feel like I
just
call you Mr. Lucado.
Absolutely.
Was it Maximilian or was it just Max?
Just Max.
Oh,
just Max.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my favorite is the new book, Grace, actually. And I stayed up. I thought I would read a little bit of it, but I stayed up the whole night and finished it. And I tell you, it was a wonderful gift to me because I'm going through a lot of things right now, as we all are in our lives, but I have been kind of crossing a few bridges that were extra difficult. And I just really love the book, so much about it. But what really started me off was the whole idea where you talk about grace not being a soft, delicate little thing. And I was wondering if you could talk a little more about it, like that it's actually a pretty rumble tumble.
Yeah, I think grace is just a radical idea. I like to compare it to the ocean. You know, when you stand at the ocean and you watch the waves come. In fact, in the book I tell about, I was 10 years old the first time I ever saw an ocean, and I just couldn't believe how the waves just kept coming. I think grace is like that. It just keeps coming. It has a drenching to it. It has a white waterness to it. It'll soak you. It'll turn you around.
Mm-hmm.
It's a powerful force. Here's my working definition of grace. I believe that grace is God's radical plan to redeem and restore a people for himself with whom he will reign forever. It's a very aggressive plan on God's part in which he is redeeming and restoring people back to his Garden of Eden plan.
Hmm.
And that we're going to reign with him forever. And he's done everything necessary, everything required to redeem a people to himself. And our wonderful decision is, do we just say yes or not? And this grace is not just something he did for us, but it's also a power that moves inside of us and changes us literally from the inside out.
What do you think is our biggest stumbling block? Just getting our brain around the fact that it can be continual?
I think so.
Doesn't run
That's
out.
That's a great question. That's a great question. Everything else in life is so merit-based, so accomplishment-based. If I have a job, I have to earn a job. If I have a salary, I have to earn a salary. If I have grades, I have to earn grades. So grace is counterintuitive, and it's absolutely unique to any other religion in the history of the world. Every other religion says you do this and hope God notices. Christianity at its heart, the gospel says, God has noticed you. God has noticed you. He loves you. He cares for you. Look up to him. We're not trying to get God's attention on us. We're trying to set our attention on him. It's just backwards. It's just backwards. And I think it just that's one of several reasons. I think the other reason it's difficult is because all of us have blown it so much. I mean, down deep, guilt is a real issue in our day. People feel condemned. They feel accused. I do. We struggle with this. But trusting that God's grace is greater than my failures, for many of us, is the biggest and most difficult step.
All right. We have just scratched the surface here on this wonderful new book by Max Lucado, New York Times bestselling author, has a new book out called Grace, More Than We Deserve, Greater Than We Imagine. He's going to stick with us through the break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about this really complicated concept of grace. We'll be back in a moment with more of the conversation.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Conversation.
Conversation, everybody. Julie, Heather, and Cindy here, and we're just, you can probably tell, we're very excited that our guest today calling in from Hawaii is prolific author Max Lucado. He's one of our very, very favorites, and he has a new book out called Grace, More Than We Deserve, Greater Than We Imagine, and it kept Cindy up until 2 o'clock yesterday morning.
Happily so. I mean, it was fantastic. So one thing in the book that really caught me was your analogy about, is there assurance of salvation, and then how that was related to how people are in a terminal when some people have boarding passes and some do not. I loved it. Yeah. It was great.
Good. So well, explain to us what that was.
Yeah, but you probably have had to fly standby. Anybody who travels much, we know what it's like. And in the book there, that's happened to me dozens of times, traveling and where I get up, and because of weather, the flight is delayed, and they're really basically trying to get two plane loads of people into one plane.
No, it's fun anymore, isn't it?
So it's just terrible, and some people end up getting put on standby, and it's really it's an uncomfortable situation to be in, because you look around the concourse and you see people who have seats, who already have boarding passes. And then you can tell those who don't, because there's a look of concern on their face. Well, my point is, I think that if there are those who feel like God has not given them a boarding pass yet, He's put them on standby for eternity, for heaven, and that's not treating lightly this very challenging conversation about eternal security, but that's just a way of an analogy to help us understand the difficulty that a person has if they don't believe they're saved already.
It's such a great analogy.
Salvation can be lost if they think that salvation is contingent upon performance. That person is living in a state of insecurity. And nothing dethrones our fears like confidence in God's grace.
Oh, I love that.
That's why I thought it was important to put a chapter in the book on why we can trust God's ability, not just to save us, but to keep us saved.
So would you say we most of us are walking around with, if not a completely wrong definition of grace or incorrect definition of grace, at least one that is watered down or skewed or... Because grace is, it was interesting to me, the wonderful song selections that our producer Ted has used, we use that word grace all the time in the Christian faith.
We do. Learning to trust this grace is, for most of us, the biggest challenge of our faith. Typically, we come to God, we trust Him early in our walk with Him. We have this conversion experience, maybe a conversion moment, which we really say, okay, Lord, I believe You rose from the dead. I believe You can forgive my sins. I believe You bought me. You own me. So that's a powerful moment. Now, living in that grace, that's the challenge that follows, and that is believing that God's grace is great enough to keep us saved. I think this is why the Bible uses two very important analogies. One is the presence of Christ inside the heart of the believer. There are 216 times in my count that the Apostle Paul talks about Christ taking up residence inside the believer. Well, that to me is huge. I think it's kind of like a heart transplant. He takes the old heart out and He puts a brand new heart in. Well, once God comes in, He's not going to let anybody go. Once He moves into somebody, He's not going to let him go. He's laid hold of us. And the second analogy the Bible uses is that of adoption. And that is when somebody gives their life to Jesus, God adopts them into the family. This is a favorite analogy of the Apostle Paul, as we all know. Well, I think the power of adoption is you don't give an orphan back. Once you adopt a child into the family, you make a conscious decision whether or not you want this child in your family or not, and you don't give that child back. We parents don't. People don't do that. How much more can we trust God not to give us back? He's already seen us from start to finish, from birth to hearse. He already knows everything we're going to do. So we can trust if He thinks we're worth adopting and worth living in, then we can trust Him to hang on to us.
You're just joining us. We're talking with Max Lucado about his new book called Grace. And it's a wonderful thing to know. But I'm wondering, as we're going through this walk, if it can't sometimes be used as an excuse or a free pass. I mean, of course God's going to forgive me. Of course he's going to love me anyway. How do you navigate that?
It will. It will be used as a free pass. I've seen it used. I've done it myself. But it won't be used that way at very long. As you live in grace, you mature in your relationship with your Heavenly Father. Mm-hmm. Again, let's say that we've been adopted into a family. Let's say that I'm an orphan who's just been plucked out of an orphanage. I'm 10 years old. I get brought into a house. They tell me, okay, in our house, you can have access to the kitchen. We're giving you kitchen privileges because you're one of ours. Well, you know what I might do? I might take advantage of that. I might come in and just eat too much chocolate. I might come in and smear peanut butter everywhere. But you know what? As I mature in that family, I'm going to see, hey, my parents have to pay for this food. I'm all part of the family, and so I've got to help take care of the kitchen. I will mature in my relationship with my parents. That's called maturity. and we mature in our walk with Jesus, too. This is the risk, though, that God is willing to take. He'll say, neither do I condemn you, he said to the woman caught in the act of adultery. Mm-hmm. Neither do I condemn you. Now go and sin no more.
Yeah.
He put her in a place of grace, and he said, now go and live out a grace-filled life. And that's what God wants to do with us. Will people take advantage of it? Absolutely. But will they do it forever? I don't think so. I think we mature in our relationship with Christ, and that grace becomes a teacher that creates a desire for holiness, not a preference for indulgence.
Well, I love that. And I also am really intrigued by this whole idea of our own want for control and our own want to kind of hide our, you know, sins, our faults from God. Like, doesn't make sense because we know God is all-knowing, but we still try to do that, and then we try to hide them to other people and ourselves. How is that kind of the wrestling we do when we're trying to let grace in, but we're really not being honest with ourselves about what's going on?
One of the fruits of grace, I think grace has a couple of immediate children. One of those children is forgiveness, and the other is confession. Now, when I say confession, I'm not conjuring up images here of some empty religious act. I'm talking about being very honest with God, no secrets with God, complete disclosure with my Maker, my Heavenly Father. Well, because of grace, where there is grace, there is honest confession. I don't play games with God. I don't feel the desire to be a hypocrite with God. I don't think I have to keep things away from him because I trust that he will forgive me. Well, this creates such a joyful spirit and such a happy spirit that the alternative is what pulls me down, and that is when I'm keeping secrets from God. So I included some teaching on the importance of confession in this book because I think grace allows me to be honest with my Heavenly Father. Even in the book, I even tell about a time in my own adult life that I was covering up a behavior because I didn't want people in my church to know that I have a certain that I love beer, and so I was hiding it, and I was actually making a little regular trip to the parking lot, convenience store parking lot, and hide and drinking in private. Mm-hmm. Well, the way I had to deal with that is, number one, by confessing to God, and number two, then confessing to some friends. There's a cleansing that happens there when we quit playing games. I was becoming a hypocrite, had become a hypocrite. I still struggle with hypocrisy. And trying to please others was more important to me than trying to please God. So how do we deal with that? Well, the first step is, Lord, look at me. I messed up. Please forgive me. I trust your grace. Have mercy upon me. Those words are just like water on a thirsty soul, and grace invites us to say them over and over again.
Oof, I love that. I have to say that I really feel for the Heather Fleeces, who's our really, truly, incredibly popular, in-demand Christian speaker, to you, to the Beth Moores, because when you say, you know, I was living in that hypocrisy, I just think it is such a seed that's being planted that the devil really hopes takes you down, because somebody like you has such an effect with ripples all over the world, as we've talked about. Do you feel that? Do you feel like you have to be on constant vigilance because there's nothing the enemy would like to see more than Max Lucado discredited?
I think integrity is the most important important virtue of a public communicator, of a Christian who's called to be in public a lot. Wouldn't you agree?
I do, but I think it's got to be incredibly challenging. And I think that the challenges come up against you must be so strong because you would just be such a valuable get, you know?
Yeah, I think so. And I thank you for your prayers. Please pray for me. Just this morning, I felt like the Lord said, Max, you're too addicted to the approval of people. And I do that. I have this fear of disappointing people. I feel like I have to have everybody's approval, and sometimes to the expense of God's approval. Mm-hmm. And so I have to work on that.
I've got a great book for you. It's called You Are Special. And surely I mean that.
She can get you a copy. She's got some extras
in
her home.
About 15 in case anyone has a baby. You've been fantastic. We are going to lighten it up a little. We've got 5 more minutes with you. And Heather likes to do a thing where she says Heather's questions. And they're probably not the questions you're used to answering. But to sum up, we definitely will pray for you. And we're so thankful for you and for all of your work. So now, sir, you might want to say a little prayer yourself. Here comes Heather's questions.
Well, you know, we love here at The Conversation going a little deeper and going a little personal, Max. So we'll start out with an easy one. Tell us 3 of your favorite qualities in your wife that are non-physical.
Oh, love
3
it.
Things you love about your wife. Mm-hmm.
Generosity. Mm. She's very generous. Is laughter a physical attribute?
No. Nope. Because it comes out of the heart. Love it.
Yeah, and her love for our 3 daughters.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. By the way, you can get this on a podcast so she can hear you talking about her like this. FaithRadioNet.com.
I hope she's listening in the next room.
Well, you made us all melt, Max, when we read that you believe any room is empty without her in
and
it.
And your dedication in this book.
I'm going to give that to my husband, Chad, and just say, use it like 3 months down the road. I won't even know it.
I'll forget Mr. Lucado wrote it. I'll think you said it.
All right, Max, tell us 3 artists that are loaded onto your iPad, your iPod, or in your CD changer if you're old school.
Okay. Stephen Curtis Chapman. Michael W. Smith. And San Antonio's own George Strait.
Right. You're a country guy.
I love it.
Is there any artist that would be a surprise to us?
I mean, yeah, you're from Texas, so George Strait's not that.
Yeah, that's not that big of a surprise. my problem is I forget the name of bands, and so I don't want to. You know, Third Day, they're my best. Some of my best friends, Mac Powell.
Oh yeah,
Third Day,
he's got a new country album out. It's going real well.
He does. Yeah. And they're just such great guys. I can't think of anybody that might be a surprise to you.
Okay.
I like George Strait, though.
David Crowder is great.
Yeah, he's another Southern guy, too.
Carrie Job.
Okay.
You know, we live in a great day of great music, don't we?
We do. All right, 3rd question before we run out of time.
So, you know, the New Testament tells us that Jesus went to go prepare a place for us. The word mansion is even used in some translations. So in my mind, I go there, Max, and I...
but we like to decorate.
I imagine what my mansion, you know, specified to Heather would look like. Flowing rivers of Diet Coke, you know, a trampoline.
A lot of orange.
One room that's just snowing. You know, I have some ideas. So in your mansion, Max, what are 3 distinctives that would be specific to you?
A golf course where you only can play scratch golf.
There you go.
Hole in one all the time.
Every time I hit the ball, I scratch my head.
That doesn't count.
That's my scratch golf. I really love barbecue potato chips, so that has to be in there.
Nice. Maybe a bed of barbecue potato chips.
Bed of barbecue potato chips. I don't want to over-spiritualize it, but I really am excited to see Jesus. I just want to know what he looks like.
Yeah.
I want to know, I just want to hear his heart and to be able to see him. And then here's what I believe, too. I think heaven is this planet reclaimed.
Yes.
Randy Alcorn's book, Heaven, really helped me on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I am excited to see this earth in its perfect state.
Yeah.
No more tsunamis, no more no more
Sandy's.
You know, catastrophe.
Yeah.
Yeah, no more Bambi. Living in harmony with all nature. I think that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, and
right
barbecue
on.
Potato chips.
And that's barbecue
right.
potato chips.
Can I throw some Oreos in?
Double stuffed. Only double stuffed.
Done. Done.
With well, milk.
That's the only way to have them.
Well, Mr. Lucado, we feel very privileged that we had this time with you. Thank you so much. Thank you for all of your work and the latest book, Grace, More Than We Deserve, Greater Than We Imagine. And we just appreciate you and how much you've influenced all of us and our kids coming up as well. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You all are a lot of fun.
Thank you, sir. And now go enjoy the surf.
Yes, aloha.
Okay, I'll do it.
Good luck
I'll
on your golf game.
Jamie.
All right, thanks, Max.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right,
bye-bye.
We'll be back with more of the conversation in just a minute.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Conversation.
Welcome back to The Conversation. Oh. We're all just basking in our happiness to talk to Max Lucado, truly one of my favorite authors. And I can't decide if I'm impressed or upset that he wrote my favorite children's book in one afternoon.
To meet a deadline.
No, it's, you know, that is like, that seems to come out of him. That is like, he found his gift. He loves to do it, obviously, 50 plus books. And it just is like breathing to him. I mean, I'm sure it takes a lot of work, but it just, he's got a knack.
Yes,
and it's a
gift.
Great read. I love this new book.
I wrote so many things down that he said, but one of the things I love when he was talking about the woman caught in adultery, he said that when Jesus said, neither do I condemn you, go and sin no more, that he put her in a place of grace. Mm-hmm. Like, can you just imagine God taking us out of the muck and the mire of our sin, cleaning us off, and then setting us down again in a safe, grace-filled place and saying, stay here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's all the time. I mean, even in our ups and downs, we have some really high moments, some really low moments. His bar is below all of that. It's like, we don't fall below and we're getting, you know, kicked off the bus. Mm-hmm. He's with us. He's like, you know what? I get it. As long as you're working on it, that's how it's going to be.
And I love that you were telling us in the break, you said, you guys, I really did. You guys are going to love this book. I stayed up till 2 in the morning. What story are you going to tell us? And I said, save it for radio. Save it for the show.
The magic.
Well, there was a story in there. I don't want to give out too much of the book, but it's about these German immigrants that came early settlers, and their two girls were taken by an Iroquois tribe, and one escaped, and one of the daughters had to stay with the Iroquois tribe for a very long time. But before they left to get themselves through the night, they sang a song that their mom taught them, and it was about God being there for you. Well, the one girl got back home, and then many, many, many years later, a whole group of these settlers were retrieved back from the Iroquois. And it had been so long, and they were all in such shock that they didn't even recognize their loved ones. Mm-hmm. Well, the mom, you know, I don't want to
give it away.
All.
Give it away.
Okay, the mom started singing this song because they couldn't find the other daughter. Mm-hmm. They couldn't even tell who it was. It had been like a long time. And she started singing this song, and the daughter came running out of the crowd and came to her mother. Mm. She didn't recognize her mother. Her mother didn't recognize her, but the song, the words, and it's kind of like, you know, God's singing to us all the time. It's just, we will recognize it if we listen.
Oh, I just got goosebumps.
He will let us know if we listen.
I shaved my legs this morning. Come on. Now my hair just got pushed out of my follicles.
I just love the idea, though. He doesn't give up. It's not like you don't have a ticket to get on the plane. You do.
Right. The waves keep crashing.
Yeah.
That's what I love, this idea that you're, you know, if you think of being in an ocean, I've been in where a wave has come and I've gotten swept up, and all of a sudden I'm consumed in the wave. And that God's grace keeps coming like that.
And we really don't have control. I threw away all my self-help books with the help of a dear friend and her mother, Miss Julianne.
We did a little organizing at the Olson home.
And
I just seen Cindy. I've never seen such conviction and absolute. I mean, she just said, no, no, no. We're going through just stacks of books. Nope, nope, nope.
No,
giveaway pile, giveaway pile, giveaway pile.
Why the self-helps?
I was with so many helpers, you and your mom, Marilyn. Lovely.
Thank you.
You know what? The self-help books, it's like, you know what, we try to make these big plans. We try to do everything. We try to figure ourselves out. But really, you know what I'm learning is you let go, you trust, and you let go. And you look at anything that comes your way in the eye and just say, okay, this is it, and God's there, and I'm just going to wait. I'm just going to listen. I'm going to, you know, pray about it. And I think, it, you know, the trusting and things kind of roll.
And Cindy is so darling and so wonderful because she is always, she's always searching to be the best, you know. She's the best mom, the best friend, the best. I am telling you, I didn't know they'd written on so many topics how self-help books.
They do. So,
I mean, it got to be where we were laughing. We're like, all right, Sind, how about this one? This one is how to have the best under the stove organized drawer. And this then, one? Yeah. You want to keep this one? No?
Sure, I'll keep this one. But here's the deal. It was pride. Oh, my goodness, guys. Really think about it. You know, it was prideful. I thought, you know, I could do it. I wanted to be perfect. I wanted to present the greatest, you know, do it right. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was some earnestness, but wow, no, it's not my, that's not my plan. That's not my job.
And nobody has to notice you. I love that he said, in all other religions, you have to do things
and
to get God
notices.
To notice you. And that God has already noticed you. I was like, that's so good. Mm-hmm. He already knows you.
You know what I think? I predict big things for this guy, Max Lucado.
Yeah, I think he's going to make
it. He's pretty good.
Well, now that he's been on our show.
Yeah.
Now that he's been on the conversation.
I guess we could be the launching pad. Well, maybe he'll get back to us about that.
Oh, so the book is called Grace, More Than We Deserve, Greater Than We Imagine. And if you haven't picked up his children's book, you are special. I really, it's a great present.
Yeah.
Anybody that has young children. Ooh. All right. Well, thanks so much for listening to the conversation today, everybody. We hope you have a great weekend, and we'll see you back here next week. Bye, everybody.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Buried deep inside of me. Yeah, this little light of mine, it's time to let it shine a bit, cause there's no point in hiding it. It's everything I am, the source of all my hope, and it's the reason why I stand. I pledge allegiance to being somebody real. There's no more holding it back. I'm showing them how I feel, cause love is more than a word. It's a noun and a verb, and hiding